Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading a story called I Was Paid $50,000 to Dine with a Stranger. This is by It's Sunday from Reddit. I hope you enjoy this story, and a huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. Let's get started. I was broke as hell, flatlined financially, emotionally, existentially. Whether by poor choices in my youth or plain old luck, life spat me out straight from high school and onto the streets. Drugs followed, rehab, then relapse. I drifted from couches to shelters to squatting in abandoned homes. Steady income? Never heard of it. So when I saw the email, I almost deleted it without reading. I figured it was just another rejection for one of my poorly written job applications. Until the header caught my attention. Dinner with me for $50,000. I'm not exactly attractive. Even before addiction wrecked the few good features I had, I didn't have much going for me. My eyes had sunk into my skull like they wanted to disappear. My skin had forgotten what hydration felt like. So this email, ridiculous. I had no looks, no resume, no justification for being chosen. But I had just left a shelter and 50 grand was a dream bigger than anything I'd ever held. So I read on. It was from a domain I'd never seen before. Shepard K at snkcompunctionfirm.com. The message read, Dear recipient, I trust this message finds you well. I invite you to join me for dinner at... Redacted. This is not a romantic offer. You will be compensated handsomely for your time. Provided you adhere to the following terms. Remain for the full meal until I pay the bill and escort you out. Do not pay for anything yourself. Wear formal attire. If you don't own a suit, one will be provided at the entrance. It will fit. Any breach will void all compensation. To accept, reply. A time and date will be sent. To decline, disregard this message. Did it seem insane? Absolutely. But desperation makes fools of us all. The kind of fool that doesn't ask for explanation, just a fork and a seat. So I replied, Hello, Shepard. Thank you for your generous offer. I accept your terms and will be there. May I ask a few questions about this proposition? Again, thank you. I didn't expect a response. Maybe a phishing scam, maybe nothing. But seconds later, a reply came. Monday at 6 p.m. at Redacted. Questions may be asked at dinner. Thank you for your cooperation. More cryptic crap. And that's when I gained the smallest amount of common sense and decided to look into whoever this guy was. This was clearly his business email, so I googled the domain, SNK Compunction Firm. I was expecting some big group of lawyers off the name alone, but nope. No law firm, just a single office tucked into a strip mall. No products, no services. Just a photo of the branch manager, despite the fact that the office barely looked big enough for two people, and the title implied multiple locations, yet I couldn't even find a second one. What did they do? Solutions? No specifics, just that one word. I thought about backing out, probably should have, but when you've got nothing left, hesitance starts looking like a luxury. I had nothing to lose, so I took the chance. Between drug-fueled stupors and getting my ass kicked once or twice, Monday crept up on me like bruises do. Slow, unseen, then sudden. I didn't have anything formal, so I threw on the only white button-up shirt I owned and some gray slacks. Both had stains I couldn't explain, and no iron had graced their surface in years. Still, they were the fanciest clothes I had. None of it mattered. The second I hobbled into the restaurant, the greeter, if you could even call him that, handed me a dry-cleaned suit without a word and pointed to the bathrooms. I took the hint. This suit seemed expensive, real Men's Warehouse type stuff. It fit perfectly, just like the email said. Too perfectly, actually. The cuffs landed exactly at my wrist bone. The collar rested like it knew my neck's shape already. I didn't have the time or money to question it. I walked back out. The place had a strange charm. Soft lighting spilled across tablecloths and smooth pools of warmth. Ornate picture frames lined the walls, filled with abstract paintings that felt a bit too familiar. Wood trim hugged every surface. Big, glittery curtains hung heavy like a wedding reception. It smelled like artificial plants and faded fabric. Soft jazz floated through the air and brushed against my ears. As I scanned the room, I realized something unsettling. When I first walked in, there were at least four tables of people laughing and enjoying themselves. It had been noisy and lively, but now, silent, empty, like a bell had rung that only I hadn't heard. Just a few bartenders, the mute greeter, and one bald man in a suit eerily similar to mine. I already knew who he was. His photo was the only thing of note I'd found when looking up the domain, the branch manager. I approached his table, and before I could ask if he was expecting me, he gestured to the chair across from him. He was an older man, maybe 50, with sad, droopy eyes. His nose was so thin and pointy, it looked like a shark's fin. He seemed to have no nostrils at all. His jowls fluttered slightly as he spoke in a soft, low tone. "Thank you for coming, young man. It's good to finally see you," he said, extending an arm for a handshake. I tried my best to sound steady and firm despite my rising anxiety. "Thank you, sir." The conversation that followed was surprisingly pleasant. The food was better than almost anything I had ever had, decadent and strangely nostalgic, as if it had been made just for me. He asked about my childhood, my current working conditions, and my family life. Most of these memories weren't pleasant, but it felt good to have someone simply listen. I reached a point where I started letting my guard down. He never interrupted, never judged, just watched. Then he got serious. He grabbed my wrist as I lifted my fork. His grip was ice cold but steady, and his tone dropped. "What is something you wish you'd never done?" "What?" I was shocked by his sudden seriousness. He didn't respond. He just stared, still and waiting. I swallowed. "I stole from my mom when she was dying. I was supposed to take care of her and protect her, but I spent her money on the stuff she told me to quit." A waitress appeared silently, depositing a small porcelain bowl before me. Inside sat a single seared scallop resting on a streak of bright red peperculus, its color staining the white plate like the shame I carried. The scallop's tender flesh gave way to a flash of heat, a reminder that some wounds never fully heal. A whisper of lemon zest lifted the flavors. He nodded, no judgment in his eyes, only something quietly accepting, then stood and excused himself to the restroom. As he left, I took a breath and tried to shake off the moment. Then I noticed it. The chandelier above us had one more bulb, just one. The light it cast bent slightly at the edges, stretching the shadows under our plates. I blinked, rubbed my eyes, back to normal, mostly. The jazz had slowed by a fraction. Notes now lingered a second longer than they should. He returned looking subtly altered. His right side appeared younger and tighter. The left side remained unchanged. A crease near his mouth had vanished, and his smile felt less weighted. He asked again, gently, "What's the kindest thing you've ever done?" I told him about a homeless kid I had let sleep in my car on a freezing night. I didn't know his name and didn't want anything from him. I just locked the doors and stayed up until morning in case someone tried anything. While his gaze lingered, another course arrived. A hollow apple cradled a warm butternut squash soup, its sweetness tempered by sage oil. The apple's crisp rim framed the velvety broth, echoing the way I had sheltered that boy from the cold. Each spoonful felt like a soft promise of safety in a world so devoid of it. This time as he listened, something in his face responded. His left eye seemed brighter, and the left side softened. He looked younger somehow. Maybe the light was playing tricks, or maybe the room had grown darker. He asked another question. "What's the worst lie you've ever told?" I hesitated. I had promised myself I would never recall this memory, yet I felt compelled to tell the old man. "When someone close to me overdosed, I could have saved them. I saw them but was frozen in fear, thinking I could be just like them. When the police came, I told them he was already dead when I got there." He nodded again, still no judgment, just listening. I'm not sure how, but as I spoke, a new course appeared, a translucent steamed dumpling, sat alone, its skin almost too delicate to touch. The moment I pierced it, a smoky, chilly broth gushed out, scorching my tongue with the sting of my lies. The gentle wrapper dissolved into nothing, leaving only the burn of a secret I thought I'd buried permanently. Then he stood and walked away, slower this time. His chair creaked slightly as he rose, and the floor beneath it curved outward in a way that made no physical sense. As I waited, I saw the wallpaper behind the bar begin to bubble faintly, like he was pressing against it from inside. The curtains seemed heavier. The picture frames on the wall had begun to tilt, each at a different angle, but not much, but enough to notice, enough to make you wonder. The waitstaff didn't change plates. The glasses refilled themselves, and I started noticing something impossible. Everyone in the room had his face, not exactly, but similar. Like a family of clones degraded with each repetition. The bartender blinked with one bulging eye, and the hostess's smile sagged like melting wax. When he came back, the distortion had grown wider. His jaw was uneven, one side shriveled, the other taut as barbed wire. The contrast on his face was more than physical now. It radiated something deeper, like halves of a personality that couldn't agree. He sat, eyes scanning me as if measuring the weight behind my silence. I wasn't sure if he was evaluating my soul or just admiring the way panic settled into the corners of my posture. His voice arrived softly, almost reverent. "What memory do you miss the most?" It took me a moment, not because I didn't know, but because I was afraid to admit how fragile the truth had become. "I used to swim in Lake Michigan every summer," I said slowly, "with friends. We'd throw ourselves off docks and scream about sea monsters and cold sandwiches. It was stupid, but I felt safe, like I didn't owe anything to anyone." Shepard's good eye glistened. A tear formed and trailed down the brighter side of his face. It lingered at his chin and disappeared into the folds. The darker side remained unflinching, its socket almost hollow now. I stared at him, unsure whether to thank him or run. He didn't speak. He just stood, his movements slower this time, calculated, weighty. The chair creaked like it hated being left alone. This bathroom break felt longer. The silence thickened and the music was barely audible. The overhead lights dimmed again, and this time they pulsed faintly. One of the picture frames fell sideways. The bartender wiped the same spot over and over, face devoid of emotion, eye bulging slightly. The wallpaper near the entrance was peeling, tiny tendrils reaching outward like roots. A fly circled the wine glass beside my plate, but never landed, looping endlessly. I felt my chest tighten. Shepard returned, and this time he didn't sit. He loomed. His face was wrong. The symmetry had given up. One eye bulged fully, twitching in quick spasms. The other was practically sunken. His mouth hung slightly open, but no breath escaped. He said nothing for several seconds, just watched me. Then finally, "Would you like dessert?" I stood almost instinctively. "I think I need the bathroom," I said. He nodded slowly. "Take your time." The restroom was too quiet, the mirror too clear. I leaned forward, expecting to see my own ruin reflected. But instead, behind me in the mirror, Shepard waited. Not in the room, but in the reflection. His body was stretched, taller than before, suit shimmering like the surface of a pond. He smiled, both eyes twitching violently. I didn't scream or move. I just stepped back out, numb. The dining room was nearly gone. The walls had peeled upward toward the ceiling. Tables melted into spiraled masses of dark wood and cloth. The floor rippled like liquid stone. The curtains had vanished entirely, leaving a strange static haze where windows had once been. Shepard stood at the center, calm.
"You've done well, young man," he said. "Repentance is never easy. The hardest part is accepting that you are no longer part of the world you knew." My knees threatened to give out. I wanted to argue, to scream, to run, but nothing in my body responded to the way it used to. Everything had slowed down. Everything had slowed except him.
"What do you mean?"
I managed to ask. He smiled gently like a father comforting a child who had just asked the final fated question. "This meal," he said, "is not payment. It's passage."
"No," I whispered. "I walked here. I remember the shelter, the email."
"You remember the drug," he said, cutting gently across my denial. "In the stall in the diner. You remember how cold the tile was. You remember how long it took for someone to find you."
I shook my head as if it might rattle the truth loose, but it didn't help. My legs wouldn't move.
"All we offer," he continued, "is a moment. One last conversation. One last taste. One last confession."
The last of the room flaked away like ash in the wind. The table in front of us dissolved into nothing. Steam hissed upward from cracks in the floor that hadn't been there seconds before. Shepard extended his hand again. The suit he wore shimmered strangely, colors shifting like moonlight on ocean currents. Patterns swirled across the threads. Faces, maybe, or shadows. I couldn't be sure.
"You did well," he said quietly. "You were honest. That's all we ask."
I felt tears on my cheeks, though I didn't know how they got there.
"What happens now?"
Shepard looked over his shoulder. Behind him, the restaurant was finally gone. In its place, a hallway of shifting doors, some open, some pulsing with warm light, others dimmed and sealed.
"Now," he said, "you choose."
And that's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did and you're on YouTube, consider liking the video, maybe leave a comment with your thoughts, and subscribe for more if you'd like. If you're anywhere else, I'm not sure what your options are, but I appreciate you for choosing this particular story out of all the other options you had access to. I just thank you for being here. I guess that's all I have to say. Take care now. Bye-bye then.